This week on The Photographer's Perspective, we talk aerial photography and marketing yourself as a photographer with Toby Harriman. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transformed the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, I am here with Toby Harriman, and I'm just getting to know him now. I've got so many questions to ask him. Welcome to the podcast, Toby.
Thanks, Chris, and nice meeting you, and hopefully we can educate a little people on who I am.
That's right, and me. I mean, like, I've been following you for so long, but I just have so many questions to ask you, too, and you're going to be one of our instructors at the Out of Chicago Conference in June. It's June 24th to the 28th in Chicago, and you're known for doing landscapes, but you're also known for some amazing cityscape stuff, and that's why we really wanted to have you, and just, like, I don't want to say surprised, but really excited when you agreed to come and teach with us. So I'm really, really happy
me too,
to have
me
you.
Too. I'm excited that you asked. So I'm excited to get involved in all this.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. And I didn't even realize you're real good friends with Michael Shainbloom, who's going to be one of our other instructors. I didn't realize you guys had that connection as well. What'd you say? You guys, like, shared an apartment, and now he's in your apartment, and what? I don't know, something like that, right?
Well, I guess it's not my apartment anymore, but
yeah, we know.
When he moved up to San Diego, I had an extra room in one of my apartments, and he moved up, and I think we lived together for 2 or 3 years before I jetted off to Alaska. And then now I'm kind of back in San Francisco, just kind of, you know, we follow where the work goes. So,
yeah. You know, how would you describe yourself as a photographer? Like, when someone's like, oh, what type of photography do you do? What do you tell people?
I tell people my main focus is aerial. And these days I really focus on kind of the photojournalistic approach when taking those shots.
Okay. And what do you mean by that? Like, photojournalistic, especially like aerial stuff. And you don't think, well, that's not like journalistic. I don't know. But what do you mean when you're saying that?
I like documenting different things. So I think one of the reasons why I originally moved to Alaska was I fell in love with it from this like trip that I did. And I just wanted to keep documenting it. I just have this kind of sense of documenting something a lot and over time. Especially with glaciers and stuff like that, there's a few areas that I've flown like every other year, and it's just really crazy to see, you know, I have these pictures that I can put side by side, taken from the same, you know, helicopter GPS point basically, and you just see the glacier is, you know, disappearing. And, you know, so like seeing stuff like that has just always been kind of, you know, it kind of hits you in a different way. And then like, even like, you know, coming back to a place like a city, it's really cool to see how the skyline changes, especially in San Francisco, or even it's happening in Chicago. There's these, you know, giant towers going up, and just kind of having that, you know, the old and the new and the progress, and, you know, kind of trying to capture it with all the different light or the fog or different seasons. So I can just kind of work in that aspect, but as long as it's from, you know, 400 feet or above, I like being above everyone looking down.
So let's talk about that, because you do a lot of helicopter stuff, but you also do drone work. I mean, how did you get into this in the first place?
So, I mean, I got into photography just, you know, I was in school studying web design, new media, and we always had to, you know, use like original photography for stuff for our websites that we were designing in class. And I kind of think a lot of the other kids would just browse Google and find some images, and me being, you know, wanting to create everything for myself, I would go, you know, I got into long exposure and started creating city stuff. And I designed websites that were like, you know, based around the kind of photo industry. And then I think one day I just bailed. I just, you know, I had enough credits. I took my AA degree, and I've been pretty much full-time photographer ever since. Aerial just kind of happened. There was one of my buddies, Nick, he invited us on a helicopter flight, which I've been like itching to do. I was following some people in Hawaii that were doing it for years, just because they have tours out there. And it wasn't as big in the city back then. This was like 2012, 2013, kind of before the big helicopter, like flying on rush, New York on air type things. And you know, it was, you know, I was out of fresh out of college, not much money. And I just remember my mom and dad being like, are you sure you should be spending that much money on an hour helicopter flight? And I'm like, hell yeah. And I'm like, trust me, just trust me. It's like, I know what I'm going after. And, you know, the way that, you know, I was really focused on the web and the marketing, just because my mind is really around that space. And we kind of put out a couple stories, and, you know, that led to, you know, really great jobs. I got a lot of great jobs from that. I was able to start licensing content, which I still license some of that older content. And it just kind of spiraled from there. I started flying more. And then we started doing some iPhone stuff with a buddy. And we tried to create like a 4K iPhone film all shot from helicopter. And that's where we went to like LA, SF, Chicago, Boston, New York. And where else did we do? I can't remember. But, it, you know, it's just like my goal's just been aerial ever since. And then I went to Alaska, and, you know, hooked up with some pilots and like companies up there. So we were flying. Then it was, you know, I got into planes, and then I started doing a little bit of like air to air up there with these old warbirds that on this little trip. And so it's just like, I'm just attracted to, you know, I don't know what it is. I didn't grow up with like any like military background, which I feel like a lot of that comes from. I just have this huge itch to fly, like, every time now. And that's what makes me happy, is just like being up in a helicopter, being in a plane, flying somewhere, and
that's,
you know,
so cool.
hanging out of the window and trying to, you know, get a different perspective.
Well, maybe we need to make that happen, because I want to say it was like 3 years ago, we, as part of the Out of Chicago conference, that was an extra add-on that people could do the helicopter trip, and we had like 20 people do it, and a lot more lined up. So you and I should talk about maybe making that happen, you know. Teach a class. I think when we did it, they were short. They were like 20 minute things, because I don't know, when you came here, did they have the heliport that's like right there?
I was just gonna say, there's that new heliport right downtown, right?
Yeah, so that's what we used. It had like just opened, but that way you can just zip right in, zip right back, and it was like 20 minute flights, but you're shooting for, you know, 18 of it, you know, like most of the time you're able to shoot because it's right there. So
that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, that heliport I think opened up the year after I came out of there.
Yeah. So
but I always flew out of Midland, just because I always pick cheaper helicopters.
Is it Midland, or are you thinking Midway, or is there something I don't know
Midway,
about?
Sorry. No, yeah. Midway. No.
All right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's where everyone went out of, was Midway before, but now with the heliport you can go right there. And so we could, what would you think about teaching a class, even if it's not a full hour, but teaching a class on tips for what you got to do when you're shooting from a helicopter?
That works for me.
That'd be fun, right?
I think that'd be awesome and right in my forte of stuff. So, and I think people would be pretty excited about that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, yeah.
When especially me. Like I said, you say helicopter and I'm in.
I should have said that in the invite email then. We should figure out how to make that work. That would be super awesome.
Cool.
And to teach a class on it, just so people, you know, you don't want to be like 10 minutes before they're getting in going, well, don't forget to do this and make sure that let's talk about it right now. What are a couple of the tips that you would give someone? You know, you're going up for the first time. Maybe you're only going to do it once. You're going to Hawaii. You want to get some shots and you're able to get something. First off, you want the doors off the helicopter, right? Is that, that's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's usually my first requirement. Yeah. Is getting doors off. The other thing that I would recommend is like, you know, some sort of strap system, or just like making sure that you have zipper pockets and like, you know, you like everything's got to be attached. I have a phone case actually with a little hook that I put the little peak leash on.
Oh yeah,
and
right.
So The Peak Design leash system has been amazing for me.
Wait, do you keep that on your phone all the time?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I tell people that I can't stand having danglies on my camera, and here he's got a dangly on his phone the whole time.
It's just recently, and I'm like on the hunt for just like a better case system, because I do a lot of iPhone photography these days. And so like I'll have two of the Peak leashes wrapped around me. And then the reason I do that is because then I'll have two of my camera bodies, and I'll have one with kind of a wider lens and one with the zoom lens. And then I'll even have like the little Peak bag that has the leash, and I'll have batteries and cards, or I'll have like a zipper pocket that I can kind of keep that stuff in. And then, so just like nothing can fly out, because like the last thing you want to do is drop anything out of a helicopter.
Right.
For losing the gear sake, and for what kind of damage could happen. And it happens. And that's, they're getting more strict, you know, as the years have gone on, and stuff happened in New York a few years ago and kind of changed. I'm not a fan of the harness systems. I know that that was a big issue that happened in New York.
What was the issue? Tell us real quick.
I don't know if I want to get into and like scare people for flying, but you know, I flew at this company years ago, and I even just like kind of questioned it when I did it. It was like a kind of just felt like a big construction harness. And the reason they do it there in New York, because they have the big A-Star helicopters, so there's a lot more space, and they'll do it so the back in the back, there's usually four seats, but instead of having the two people in the middle, which are always like kind of trying to lean through somebody, they'll sit those people on the floor kind of hanging out. So they sit on the floor with their feet kind of on the strut, and then you're all strapped in. And I was double leashed in to each side of the helicopter. So there was two leashes on the back of my harness strapped to the floor. And then, you know, imagine four people like that. And so, you know, 2 years ago, a helicopter had an issue. I think someone's leash hit something on, the pilot, like it like triggered something, and then the pilot thought that he was like losing like fuel or something, so then he went to go flip that switch but realized it was off, and then he had to make like an emergency landing in the Hudson River or the East River. Whoa. And the float things that pop up that are supposed to keep it from floating like didn't go, so it tipped. And so the helicopter goes upside down underwater, and everyone was able to get, or no, the pilot was able to get out because he wasn't in a harness. And I'm just like reading this, like as it's happening, because people are texting me. Mm-hmm. And my mom's like, "Are you in New York?" And I'm like, "No, mom, I would have told you if I was in New York flying."
Yeah.
And what happened is they all got tangled in their harnesses and leashes and couldn't get out, and like couldn't cut free. But and I knew that the second it happened, I was like, I bet they couldn't get out because they were all tangled up. Like I knew that situation, and my mom always wanted me to wear a harness over the years, and I was just like, I feel like less safe in a harness. And so now there's like FAA approved harnesses, and it took a little bit for insurance to kind of get a little bit more comfortable again with but yeah, you know, safety is always the number one concern. My rule has always been, if the pilot is uncomfortable or says no, that's how it goes. It's, you know, you never push the pilot. You know, I always ask, and I'll be like, can we do this? Can we do that? And it's like, yeah, I can try, or no, or no, you know, and then I'm just like, if you don't feel comfortable, don't right. do it because of me. Because at the end of the day, you're the pilot, you went through the hours and the training, and you know what's going on. I'm just here to take pictures. As much as I want to get there, if we can't, we can't. Beyond right. that.
So if it's not this big harness, there's still something where you're strapped in. I mean, it's not like you
yeah,
could just
there's
jump.
Like every helicopter has a different seat belt system. Some of the smaller ones have, it's more just like a car seat belt, and it's like an airplane, you know, buckle. It could be released pretty quickly, easily. So, you know, I'm usually hanging in. People like to hang out still and get their foot shot. I have had enough of those. Aside from the scare, you know, it's just, you know, it is something to think of. You are in a helicopter. Some of them are like lawnmowers, you know, as far as the engine, the small like Robinson 44s, it's literally just like a lawnmower engine. So it's like, the nicer helicopters are great, but they also cost an extra $1,000 an hour usually. So I usually avoid that unless the client's paying and requires it. But I fly a lot and I still have a lot of trust in it. Even after, you know, being in, like, reading all of that stuff and following all that, it's something to be aware of, just like anything in life, just like driving down the road at night on a Friday night, you know, you got to worry about more drunk drivers and all sorts of things. So, but, you know, going back to kind of the gear, you know, I like to leash everything up. I like to have everything as secure as possible. I like to make sure that there's nothing that would hit the, you know, any of the other switches in the helicopter. And and then I, you know, getting to like the settings part, I'll admit my first helicopter flight, I was always an AV guy. And when I switched to aerial, it's like, I did my first flight and I totally messed up. You know, I went in with, you know, I was playing with settings, doing AV, like trying to like push some stuff. And then you just really, you know, you're moving fast. You're moving from, you know, anywhere from 40 to 90, 60 miles an hour. And, you know, you're going around these subjects quicker, depending if you're in a zoom lens or not, you get some weird stuff. And it's a lot harder to nail that focus. Even when you think you're nailing that focus, it's just like, there could be some vibration. There's, sometimes I use like a Kenyan gyro that kind of helps get rid of some of that vibration. I'll usually start in manual and, you know, as fast as possible. And then I kind of, you know, am usually staying in that like 5.6 to F11. And I kind of, you know, if we're up at like before sunset, it's bright, you know, I'm shooting fast. And then as we get later, you know, the ISO is going up, the ISO is going up, the ISO is going up, the ISO is going up. And then, you know, you get to like that blue hour and then you're really pushing it. And then it really comes down to like what camera you have and how much of that ISO it can handle and the low light. So, you know, having really fast lenses and, you know, the great like low light quality camera is pretty necessary if you want to get that dark stuff. I don't really have personally the right gear sometimes for it just because costs and budgets and stuff like that. But I definitely try to make it work as much as possible.
So as it gets darker, will you go down? You said 5.6 to or F5.6 to F11. Do you go down to 2.8 or something like that? Or do you need the depth of field?
No, I'll definitely go down to 2.8 if I have it. I actually don't have a lens that I'm using 2.8 on anymore. And I do need that in some of those cases, cause I can only go, I'm using the, like 24 to 105 F4, a nice. Lot these days.
What do you shoot? Sony or? Is that what
I'm an old school Canon guy.
Canon. So. All right. Yeah. Well, that's what I had was I had the Canon with the 24 to 105, but I got the Sony now with the 24 to 105, but yeah.
I'm shooting on the 1DX Mark II a lot. I love hate it. Love hate every camera. I've struggled finding a camera that I want to switch to for what I do. Just cause like a lot of time, like I really want like something that can handle like those like cold Alaskan just winters. And I think the newest Sony is finally, I think the battery life is a little bit better there. And just like, I've never liked that cold feel of the body in that small body. There's just been like some, and then the UX of it is just always thrown me off. But I mean, I can't deny the camera quality on the Sonys are amazing, but I'm kind of in the middle of like, I've always been in the middle of like, what do I want to do? Cause I shoot with the 5DSR a lot too. And that's also very bittersweet. it's got great, you know, it shoots like 50 megapixels but like you really have to nail that one. It's not great in low light, but it's gets the job done. And like for me these days, as you say, you know, I do a lot of drone photography stuff. So I'm on drones a lot shooting. If I'm doing personal projects, I use the DJI Mavic 2 a lot. And then a lot, like all of our commercial work is with like the Inspire 2 with the X5S or the X7. Which I don't personally own anymore. I just like have a team that kind of deals with all the gear and then I kind of work for them or they'll work for me. And I just let them deal with the gear now. So
you mean that you have like certain guys that, you know, own these things and like you'll hire them to help with a project if you know, hey, I need to get the Inspire or something like that?
Exactly. I've gone a little deeper to where I've basically just created a partnership with the drone pilot that I've hired for years. And we just kind of, I basically only hire him, honestly. And he hires me. So like the other day he hired me for, we were shooting an ad spot for Hero Motorcycles and down at like, you know, Bixie Bridge, the classic, you know, car ad spot. And then, you know, or in a couple weeks, you know, he hired me for another where I'll just come in and cam op, because we dual op on the drone. So like he's piloting on one controller and I'm just operating camera on the other.
Right. Yeah, that's so, like the Inspire thing, right? That's what that allows you to do.
Yep, any of the bigger drones. So like Inspire or all the heavy lift systems, which are the ones where you mount whatever camera you want on it. And so we'll always dual op those. Like we're going down there in 2 weeks for a supercar ad. Same exact spots that we took off for the. So it's just like a lot of people want those spots, and we know how to get it and get the, you know, the locations, the permits, and kind of keep nailing those shots for whoever requests. But yeah, we're always in dual op mode there.
I don't know how to say this, but I feel like like you're like the real deal. Like you're not just like, hey, I got a drone off of Amazon and flew it around and now I got a whole bunch of likes. You're like the real deal. Like we got to talk a little more about this. Like who are some of the clients you're working for? You named a few of them, but you're working with a lot of big names, and like that's really like your thing now, right?
That's kind of where, you know, a little bit like Shameblum, to be like honest, we kind of both came from that time lapse world, and you know it was funny just living with Shameblum. We literally would get hit up by the same clients a lot. And I'd be in my room and he'd be in his room. I'd be like, hey, did you get an email from?
They were trying to get a better deal from one of you.
Yeah. And then we're both like, all right, so how do we want to do this? You know, like it was hilarious. Like not so much anymore. Cause like we've kind of, I think, gone our own paths a little bit. He still does a lot of like commercial stuff. And
he doesn't do a lot of aerial though.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the thing. He does do some, and he has some incredible aerial stuff as well. I mean, he's an incredible photographer, period. So I wouldn't expect anything less. But I kind of just took the aerial and just, I feel like I just like wanted to run with just that. It's just always just been, you know, when you find something that you love, you just go after it. And that's kind of what I did with that. And I started getting, you know, a lot of the San Francisco kind of offers, just, you know, people would hit up, and that's kind of how I got more into the production and commercial space. And as the, you know, the laws built, because when I started, it was kind of right when, you know, that was like the P2 days. And I remember some people were giving me crap, like, why aren't you flying drones? Like you're flying in a helicopter to get this stuff. And I was like, well, there's no law. Like there's like zero restrictions for helicopters. I mean, not zero, but like, you know, you don't have to have a Part 107. You don't have to, you can fly over people, buildings, all these things. You can, you know, you can use a real camera, get real quality stuff. And then I just started getting in, and, you know, as I marketed myself as an aerial photographer, I did a lot of backplate stuff where we shoot, kind of the backplate of a scene. And then the real estate company will drop the building in 3D so that they can pre-sell it. They do that with those new skyscrapers in, you know, the one being built there. You know, you saw the pretty pictures and it looked done, right. Marketed way before it was done. I actually think I pitched on that job, but I think I know who won it, but I wasn't there. And then for some reason I get hit up for a couple of those Chicago. I think it's just through SEO because I've shot there and I've marketed some of that work.
Well, you got a great gallery of Chicago images, and yeah, that'll come up in searches. I mean, right? I mean, that's part of it, right?
Yeah. 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 And so, you know, I've been very good about, you know, coming from a web background, I've been very good about putting, you know, everything out there in a very specific way to target specific clients.
So I want to say this, just to interject, this is kind of my own thing, because I see this over and over again, you know, getting to know people like you that nowadays there are so many good photographers, and you're an amazing photographer. But what I find interesting is the background that people have that they bring into this as a business is what separates them from everybody else. So like the example I give is like, say, Thomas Heaton, and he's doing his landscape stuff. He's a great photographer, but really it's that he's got a video background. And so his videos are amazing. So he's done amazingly well on YouTube. It's not because his photos are better than other photographers. We have a lot of attendees that come to our things and their photos are almost as good, but it's because of his background as a video guy that he does that. And like one of the first things I noticed when I went on your site, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be saying all this, but I'm kind of like, this guy is like a huge deal. He's got a freaking amazing website. And now you're telling me, well, that was your background was web design. It's like, and not only that, but you're telling me all the SEO behind it as well is what really helps you do well. I mean, I think it's a really interesting point.
As a lot of people think, a lot of people ask over the years, like, you know, oh, like, you know, did you go to photo school? Did you do that? And like, or like, should I go to photo school or should I do that? And I say no every time. and I, you know, I tell them, I'm like, you know, photography's not easy, but you know, everyone has a phone and the phones are freaking amazing. I mean, they just like, I'm shooting video on my phone now that I couldn't even get a better shot with my 1DX because of the gimbals that I'd need to get there's no in-camera stabilization. And like, so some of the stuff that you can just get with a smaller thing because it's more accessible is going to outrun being able to do a certain things. And so I tell people, you know, go study marketing and go study business and like learn how to sell yourself. Cause if you don't know how to sell yourself, you are going to just like you, then you have to be just a miracle best. like your work is either going to have to stand out so far ahead of everyone else's that like everything else will fall into place, or you're going to have to work your ass off on all these different aspects of, and as you know, and as everyone knows that is probably teaching here, the work that we do, and that a lot of people don't understand. Like I live with three people now who aren't artists or photographers. They don't even have Instagram, which is honestly amazing.
What?
It's kind of like comforting, you know, it's like, right. I feel like I'm in a different, like, I feel like I can escape that world when I'm around them. And, but they don't necessarily maybe understand, or some of those people don't understand the amount of work that you do. Even when it looks like you're not working, you're like, you're sending emails, you're like tweaking your website, you're editing photos, you're trying to post it on, you know, stay consistent on Instagram and on all these other social platforms and all these things. And it's just a lot of work. And, you know, one of the things that I tell people about, you know, the website stuff, like if you are like, build a good website. Like it was the one thing that I always knew and have like forced myself is don't put all your eggs in one basket. We have zero control over Instagram. We have zero control over Facebook. And we have zero control over all of these sites. Yes, they are amazing in what they can do. They are annoying. They are spammy. They are, you know, we wish they'd all just go away. But if they all went away right now, if all those sites just shut down, you know, there'd be a million photographers that would just be clueless in my mind, just absolutely lost. And then it would just be like wheels to the, like everyone would just be hustling. Like, where do we go?
Right.
Your website will always be there. Sort of. I mean, unless if the internet crashes and like GoDaddy takes down their hosting servers or whatever, you know, but like you have pretty much complete control over it. You know, you can structure it how you want. You can have ads or not. You can SEO or not. You can put your photo there. You can put your photo in landscape mode. You can put it in horizontal, you know, you can do all these different things. And so I tell people, you know, build your portfolio, build your website, and just like, and focus on, and don't be afraid to invest in yourself. And that was one of the, I've gotten myself in trouble the past 2 years because I maybe have gone a little too deep, but you know, I'm planning very long term, and I've kind of maybe screwed myself short term, but I know I'm going to be safe in the long run. And I know I'm going to be able to keep this going for a while because of all these things that I've built up that has allowed some like passive income or passive work just based off of, you know, certain things that I do and clients that I've met. And, you know, for the same reason that, you know, investing a couple hundred dollars in, you know, a couple hour helicopter flights over San Francisco, it allowed me to get then something that other people didn't have. And, you know, that's the way I kind of looked at it. I kind of knew early on, like the Instagram thing, just being in San Francisco, you're kind of a part of the beginning of everything. It's not as much anymore just because how easy it is to spread stuff fast. Like if you looked at that, what was that? Vero?
Yeah. Vero. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
But like, you know, like everyone in the world was on that for like in the photo world was exactly. On it for like five days and then it was just like gone.
Right.
But like
then there was like a story about the CEO and everyone's like, I'm out of here. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Like I always join those just to like, you know, get on the train and kind of look around a little bit. But then I'm just like, all right, I'll just sit in the back and watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, everyone likes to look at like Instagram a little bit. Like everyone says it's going to die and everyone says like, oh, it's just this trend right now. And it's going to be the next MySpace. But like, you can't compare this to MySpace. MySpace never had the ad revenue and the money that this has. And like, there's billions of dollars a month, monthly, probably going towards influencers and like advertising on this platform. So it's like, it's really tough to get away from. And like, I try to pull away from it as much as possible, but like, then you get this job and it's like Instagram related and it's hard to turn down certain things as a creative anyways, because we're always hustling and always trying to, you know, keep things going and they're always, and sometimes they're too appealing and I've definitely turned things down, but there's certain things that I do, but the influencer world that's a whole nother world to me anyways. And I keep like inching my way into it and then like trying to pull back from it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that's the thing that the social media sites have that you don't have with your own website is that any company could go and see how many followers you have. And I think that that's important. And if you, no matter how good your website is, if you have 200 followers on Instagram, companies look and go, well, you know, he's not a big deal. And on your website, you can't be like, well, geez, I have, you know, this many people, thousands of people on my email list. There's still no like proof to that. It's like, you know, you see
there's
it on the social
a little,
media.
But yeah, it's not as upfront. And I mean, to be honest, most of the good companies that are doing influencer activations or marketing on social, they really don't even look at your following anymore. They have a special website that they use that they type your name into, and it pulls analytics or your engagement. And I get asked to share this too for some who don't pay for those platforms, but they'll see, you know, if that you have a, you know, a 55-45% women to men ratio. They'll see that your top audience is, you know, San Francisco, London, India, or they'll see that, you know, your engagement rate for your posts on average are, you know, 1 to 6 or 7%, you know. I think the average is like, you know, a good, considered good engagement rate is like 1% these days or something. So like if you're getting above that, you know, so like the smart clients, as I call them, are looking at that, because you can't just like look at a following, because people could just buy them. And it's so easy to tell, obviously, because you'll look at a following. Oh, they have 200,000 followers. They're getting 200 likes and their comments are all... Oh, those all look like bot comments. Like you can tell what's a bot comment or not anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is that like even the bots are bots, and like the bots are real and fake people now. So there's fake bots and there's real bots. Like it's like real, because real people are like using all that. And like I've kind of found that my engagement rate has gotten stronger on these platforms by using less hashtags, because the more hashtags you use, the more bots you draw. Because some Joe Schmo has his page bot set up everything that's hashtag San Francisco, go comment this great photo. And then you'll post a video and it will be like, great photo. And you'll be like,
It wasn't even a photo. Yeah.
and so you know, like the less that I've hashtagged, the more real comments that I've gotten from real people. And so I've always gone at like the less is more, because it's, but you know, I'm not in that world. Like, I, you know, I have friends that, you know, make their living off of it. They're very high and stuff like that. But, you know, and then you even look at like, you know, compare people in the 800 plus thousand, you know, like those big types, like even Chamberlain, for example, you know, he has a huge following, but you know, he will even say he doesn't get a lot of that type of work. And because his work is more, it's like I say, like, we don't shoot people, you know, literally and physically, you know, we're landscape focused. And, you know, so a brand that wants a product in it isn't necessarily going to go after you. So you're not necessarily, but then you go to these influencers who, some of them are making millions of dollars a year. And, you know, every other post is, you know, every post is a selfie or of them taken by somebody else. Every post has people in it and some, you know, setup scene in there, you know, the tent shot with the, you know, the camp stove and the beer. And like, you know, I'm biased because I do beer. I do have a beer contract, and it was the one thing that was weird, because like now I'm like throwing myself in there somehow and like trying to advertise beer and fit it into my audience. And it was like the one that I like agreed to do that, like, you know, like I question all the time, but it's a great partnership. It kind of pushes me to kind of create some different stuff, which I actually kind of like. At the end of the day, you know, people can hate on it, but you know, if I'm able to pay my bills and like, you know, go pay for another helicopter flight to do what I really love, then like, that's my goal. And, you know,
it allows you to share the things that your followers really want to see. So, yeah.
So, you know, like you may get one here and there, but you're going to get 20 more because of that are way better. And you're going to get, you know, you're going to allow me to go to that next country that I want to go to and spend a month in and document. And so a lot of people are just so quick to, one, be jealous and just yell at you.
Well, yeah.
Or two, just be haters completely.
Yeah, just avoid the selfies or the photos of you with the beer and the drone controller, or hanging out of the helicopter, or try not to do
that. That one doesn't work.
F8, the photographer's perspective, is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life.
It's funny with the beer ones, like they're like, it's like, no, you can't show lakes, you can't show vehicles, you can't show like all that. There's so many like restrictions for some of that stuff. And it's just like, so like, you know, you couldn't show it like I'm always thinking of these shots and then I'm like, oh, I can't do that. Oh, I can't do that. Like, you know, it's like, oh, like go like get my buddy with a motorcycle and like, we'll go like, you know, I'll get like him and his girlfriend, like, you know, like up in the hills over the fog, like where they park the motorcycle, like have a beer. And I'm like,
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of legal, but you can't advertise that, you know, it's like, so there's like strict advertising laws that once you get into those contracts, like the smart clients will, their contract will tell you, and there'll be like three pages of like do's and don'ts.
Oh, so it's not so much that the company doesn't want it, it's that that's law, the for advertising.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think alcohol, you have to be over 25 even to model, to even be the model in the shot.
Gotcha, yeah.
And so it's yeah, there's, you know, like with everything, there's rules, there's regulations. And you know, advertising is something that like we have to put partner or call out the partnership, or, you know, like, I mean, the SEC's gone after people for advertising and not saying that they were paid. But then there's gray areas there. And I mean, there's always gray areas. But if you're big enough, they'll go after you. Hmm. And luckily I'm not there. I'm not in the Jenner world.
Yeah, you know, it does seem that there's a big distinction. It sounds like you've kind of bridged that gap, and a lot of people have. But, you know, those just influencers on Instagram, it's like a completely different world than true photographers. I don't want to say true, but, you know, and there's the whole everyone's a photographer, but the people that are out there shooting with their phones and they're doing that, and I'm not saying in any way that's not as good, but it's like a totally different thing than people that are trying to go out and do creative artistic work with yep. whether it's with their phone or whatever. It just seems like those are two completely different communities. And sometimes photographers are pushed to, hey, you got to interact with that type of community on Instagram when it's not really like your thing. You just want to, you know, do it for yourself and get great shots. I don't know.
Yeah. So. You hit the nail on the head there. It's something that I think about a lot these days. It's just like how you brand yourself and what people are calling themselves. And it's kind of actually the next, you know, being the entrepreneurial side of myself, I like starting different things and companies and stuff like that. Not that I have the side to really build it to the mass scale that I want to, but like, you know, I really think the industry needs almost like a stamp, almost like, you know, like organic, just like food has, you know, there's all these different stamps for food, but there's like no stamps for photo. And I know that
you're saying there should be a stamp that says like real photographer.
no, not real, but for companies like Nat Geo and journalists and stuff like that, there's no way of telling like and Nat Geo's been getting, you know, they've gotten in trouble a little bit with some of the like star photographers. There was someone recently that was just called out and, you know, she photoshopped tons of her sky and then like, and so like, you know, at Adobe Max recently, they released a software that you can put the photo in and it will say how edited the photo was. It will show all the hot spots. And I think they said they partnered with Time Magazine and probably Nat Geo and all these companies so that the company can feel like they're more honest and knowing. And so they'll vouch their photographers in that way. And, you know, I don't think that you have to have a real photographer stamp on you. But, you know, if you are selling yourself as a real photographer stamp, I think that there should be, you know, a system that you can or a program that you can apply to that you can get vouched for. And then it allows you to work in different industries and work in that industry and have that industry want to pick you from that batch of people who are approved in that, like, you know, if you're a, you know, like you call it, like you could have like 10 different tiers of like, you know, this is, you know, you're a journalistic or you're a, you know, fine art or you're, you know, a complete digital artist, like a compositor that, or, you know, you're completely raw, you know, like 100% well, raw.
Let's get into that. I mean, where do you see yourself in that spectrum?
I'm more in the, journalistic, but you know, I definitely, you know, I'm definitely playing with, you know, sliders still and basic exposures. I'm trying to make the raw look a little bit more real. And I probably push a little color, like saturation just to, you know, make it a little, you know, I'm editing for the screen these days. So, you know, I want it to look good on Instagram. Sadly, you know, that's where 90% of the people are seeing our work. So it's just like, you know, that's the reality in my mind. So I would put myself on that like more organic-y, photojournalistic, like with a slight fine art, but like I'm not spending 40 hours in Photoshop blending waters and clouds and, you know, changing something or warping a scene or making the mountains taller or Photoshopping out a ton of stuff or, you know, I'll take out dust spots and I'll take out certain things if it's really, really bad. But like, you know, And more these days, I'm going more like more organic. Like I'm just like, you know, as I think about it, when National Geographic did reach out 3.5 years ago and asked me to be a contributor, it was just for video. That's all they wanted. And I was like, what about photos? And they're like, let's just stick to video for now. And that like, it was kind of like that, like weird kind of like, like what don't they like? Why don't they want my photos? In a way, like, and it totally changed my mindset. And now I'm allowed to contribute both. It was basically to give a background on that partnership or contributor partnership. It was just Instagram access actually. So, and that's how Nat Geo ran all their Instagrams for a while. I literally would get a text with a password.
Right.
to their account, and they I think 10 to 20 people had it. And we would, you know, we had strict guidelines, and we would post ourselves. I'd log into the Nat Geo Travel Instagram with 30 million followers and post a photo myself with a description. And I'm a terrible writer. So like I had friends, like I was like, does this sound good? Does this look good? And I'm just like, I mean, like to me, I'm like, wow, like if I mess up. And then like, I think once I post it, like, I mean, you post there and like within like the first minute, it's got like 10,000 likes, and you're just like you can't, you don't have room for error. And, but we had like access to that. And I'm in like, you'd go to post and you can't post within 3 hours of someone. So you're like, you know, there's like three other people sitting there like, all right, that post done. All right, go, so that you can move on. And it was really annoying, actually. Like, I guess if it was video, they allowed you to post whenever, or if you're on an assignment, like, for them, people on Nat Geo assignments, they're around the world, like limited service. Like they wanted to give them access to like post whenever they wanted. Now we go through a system where we submit, and then it takes like a month to get through a queue, which is fine. But it's like they shouldn't have given us as much access as we had. It was kind of it was scary, but it was cool. It was interesting that how they do it, and that's how all those pages were, you know, were run. Things are changing now because Disney owns them and all of that. Everything's always shifting, and I've kind of gotten more into contributing for other things with them. I'm going to be in there. They're actually cutting their Traveler magazine print version in the US starting in January. So their December, January issue is going to be the last printed US Traveler magazine. I think they're not their Nat Geo magazine. And, mm-hmm. I think I have one photo in there, but I think it's about Instagram and they're like, so, but anyway, I was like, finally I'll get in there. Like their published magazine, but it's kind of cool. Their last one. So I'm like getting deeper into some of that stuff, but it was like a complete Instagram kind of contributor partnership for a while, which, you know, they don't pay. It was one of those few things where I'm just like, that's fine. Like I'm posting, I have complete control. They're not asking you to do anything. You know, every time I'd post, I'd get anywhere from, you know, 300 to 3,000 followers back on my page. I got some licenses through that where, like, I got an email that was like, hey, like, we saw that video, blah, blah, blah. Like, we, you know, we're doing this and can we license it? And I'm like, yeah. So, like, there's been some beneficial stuff that has come from that. And it's just, like, working my way into that world as much as possible.
Yeah. That's a really tough one for new photographers when, you know, there's always people reaching out, hey, would you do this for some exposure, right? I mean, that's always a big thing, but at some point, Nat Geo, I mean, it's worth it. And there's some things you got to do like that, yeah.
There's definitely, yeah, that is a huge topic of discussion with people of like, you know, especially with Instagram. And I've always been bittersweet about pages just resharing. And to me, I try to, you know, I kind of give that page a rating. I'm just like, you know, and these days I'll straight up reply. Like, you know, there's certain pages that will, hey, that will actually ask, and I give them credit for asking permission first, but I'll straight up respond. And I'll kind of just say like, you know, I usually like, you know, working in these partnerships. If like, I'll give you access to content to post for free, if you're giving me like a project paid in another element, or, you know, so then it's a little bit both ways, like, you know, hire me for an assignment and I'll do some work for you. And then, you know, then it's a little bit more mutual. You're not just totally taking from me. But then there's a lot that are just fully about building their page big, and they've grown, and a lot of big pages grew this way. And I, you know, I hate to say it, but like some of the like Art of Visuals and you know, even Beautiful Destinations, you know, they started by doing that. And then they grew to be more legit, to where they, like, you know, Beautiful Destinations, like they got their page big by just resharing other people's work. And then they turned it into a business, and they have a, you know, a creative agency now, and they hired people fully, and they hired people that they were sharing. So it is, you know, it's bittersweet when you look at it that way.
And what are the rules on that? Like, can you just share someone? See, I'm not big enough into Instagram, and I should never say that, but well, what's the actual rule?
I don't know if there's a written rule.
It's more of an ethics thing? Okay.
It's kind of an ethics thing. And the pages that I'll really go after are the ones who, I think Ryan Dyer was making a joke about this yesterday on his story. And it's just like how pages share your work. And it's like, you know, beautiful, 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 like hashtag follow me. And then they'll put like four little groups of like, follow, you know, pretty pictures, follow pretty pictures, follow pretty pictures, and then dot, 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 hashtag batch. And then it's like photo by,
right?
You know, it's
right,
like,
right.
And so I'll like, I'll straight up message those pages. And I'm just like, you know, like if you're going to share my work, like don't bury my tag under your four tags and hashtag batch. Like that's like, come on, like have a little ethics. Like, and I even say like, look at how Nat Geo does it. You know, it's like, like they are every post in the smart, and you'll start to see that now on these like legit pages. It's photo by Toby Herman. That's the first thing, very first thing that any of those pages will put is it is the photographer first, and then it's the story. But you know, for Nat Geo, it is about the photographer and the photojournalism. That's who they are. So you know you have to weigh that. But like if you know at I also offer like cheaper, I'm starting to offer just like, you know, if you're a bigger page and you have a budget, like, you know, just pay me a small fee, you know, $25, $50, or, you know, per piece, I'll give you access to a Dropbox. You can use it whenever you want. And, you know, you just, we'll add it up at the end of the month or something, you know? Huh. And then it's just like, then it's kind of like a micro stock kind of thing, but like a little deal with them. They're going to share stuff for free anyway. They'll steal it for free, you know? $25, not a lot, but it adds up. You know, you get 5-10 pages doing that, and all of a sudden you're making an extra $1,000 a month. So there's like little things that you can do there. Like I haven't gotten a lot of ground on that idea just because people don't want to pay for content. It's and that's kind of, you know, I've made a lot of money on stock over the years, and I still sort of make a little bit, but you know, that's where I went into that production, going back to, you know, talking about like my drone jobs and more production jobs. That's something that, you know, does separate you from, you know, being an influencer, being a fine art photographer that's going to, you know, be just focused on beautiful like prints and workshops and tutorials and stuff like that. I went the way of trying to work on production sets and be the drone team. So, you know, we're working on these, you know, car ads or motorcycle ads, and you know, there's hundreds of people involved, and we're just like the drone team. But it's like, you can't just be an influencer showing up to those with, you know, a Mavic. Like, you know, there's part 107s, there's waivers, we have location fees, we have, you know, cops closing down the road for, you have 3 minutes, you know, get the shot before they open it back up. And, you know, you're dual opping it, you're trying to follow, you know, you can't fly over there, you're over the water because it's this, you can't fly. And like, you're being watched, like those commercials are being watched by the people that you're getting permits from too. So, you know, if you do things differently, like it's going to bite you in the ass later on, or you're not going to get those jobs again. And like, they're very high stress situations on these jobs, because there's, you know, there's directors who want one thing, and then there's rules that want another. And, you know, it's finding that nice balance. And it's fun working on those jobs, but it's definitely different than when I'm, you know, hired to go up and take a picture for something out of a helicopter, which I do. And those, you know, the clients usually aren't there, and I can kind of go create a little bit more freely. And then, you know, then I'm like on these, like, you know, this day shoot for a car ad, and like literally, you shoot probably like, we try to shoot for no more than 5 minutes of like the whole day, just because of how it works. But it's all just like planning, and it's all coordination. And like, I mean, that's how those jobs are. They're 99% planning, coordination, budgets, estimates, contracts, you know, arguing, and then like trying to figure out this, that, and then boom, you have five seconds, get the shot. You know,
man, that sounds stressful. Oh my goodness. You know, I feel like we could, I don't, that, like, you convinced me. I have no interest in any of that. I will stick to trying to organize our little photography conferences here, which are super fun. And I love the point.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I love the part where we have people come in and they do it because they just do it for themselves. And, you know, maybe they have only, you know, they don't have a ton of followers. They do photography because they love it. But you know, people really do enjoy learning from them. And then we have people like you who are like I said, kind of the real deal here. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, actually, for this Chicago one, though, we have an amazing lineup. I was kind of telling you some of the people.
Yeah, I don't think I'm the real deal coming into the Chicago thing.
Oh,
I come from a different world, but it's a stack. It's stacked.
So yeah, let me just, if you don't mind, I just want to say the few of the people that are coming for the Chicago one, but we have you, Michael Shane Bloom, Elia Locardi, Daniel Chung, Serge Ramelli, Danny Ide, Greg Benz, who does Lumenzia, Nanad from Chicago, Angie McMonagle from Chicago, and a few others that we still got to figure out, but it's going to be really fun. Really good time.
I'm excited.
And we got to figure out the helicopter thing.
I followed Daniel's work forever.
Yeah.
It was cool seeing his name on there just because I know he's, you know, you're flying him out from Dubai. And I mean, he's the OG Dubai photographer before, probably before everyone had the same shots. But
yeah, exactly. But he knows all the spots to go. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of on our list, you know, and out of Dubai in the future. So, I mean, that would be pretty good, I think.
I think that would.
That would be fun.
Or we could do an out of Alaska eventually, too.
Yeah, man, I have so many more questions to ask you about that and everything else. I feel like we really need to wrap up the podcast, but...
I was going to say, how long do these go for?
Yeah, I think we're already over. So so I think my point is, I can't wait to hang out with you more in Chicago, but I think it's an opportunity for lots of people to come and to get to hang out. And that's really a big part of our events. You know, of course, we're going to go shoot and you're going to learn a lot of things. But to just get to sit down with these people that have figured out how to really make this happen and get to ask your own questions. You know, I asked the questions I wanted to ask for the podcast, but for our listeners to come in and get to ask their questions of you, you know, have a beer together and make that happen.
Exactly.
It's kind of what makes it special. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, me too.
All right. So where can people go and see all this great work of yours and follow you?
Well, anywhere. You can just Google Toby Harriman, or you can find me on any social media with just Toby Harriman. Or I kind of have my creative company, Planet Unicorn.
Yeah, I saw that. It's pretty awesome.
That's kind of where I release all of my projects these days. It's kind of, I codename it our storytelling gallery. That I've kind of been building that up as our kind of, you know, stories, and we have the print gallery, and then I have Planet Unicorn Creative, and that's what I kind of run all of our productions under. But I should be releasing my new Myanmar project from last year that I shot. I've taken way too long editing it. I wish I came from a better video editing background. That's my downside. Not my downside, but it's definitely more challenging, but I have about a 20-minute film from Myanmar that and a full photo series that I think I exported my last one last night. My final
That's what you say. Yeah. That's awesome. How about the one you were talking about before, the helicopter one through all those cities? Is that on your site as well?
Yeah. So if you go to, you know, planetunicorn.com, you can find, it's called the iPhone 6S 4K video, probably.
Okay.
Definitely not perfect. We had a lot of issues with like rolling shutter and having the, that was the first year that the iPhone came out with 4K. So that was our goal, but it had the in-camera stabilization in the lens. And I think it was fighting our gimbal stabilization plus fighting the helicopter vibration. And I still got that with the new iPhone 11 when I went up recently with a gimbal. I got, you know, the footage was not good, but the warp stabilizer was able to fix it perfectly. I don't know if warp stabilizer is better in 2020, but there was we didn't have the rolling shutter issue, which is like harder to fix. And so the footage that I can get now in 4K 60 on this phone is beyond incredible, honestly. There's a video on my Instagram, I think it's the second video, and that it's all it's just like smooth slow-mo, and I'm like, it still blows my mind that the phone can do that, honestly.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's not too many of these podcasts that I've done in the last 5-6 weeks where iPhone 11 doesn't come up as somewhere in the conversation. It's crazy what it can do. So yeah,
it blows my mind. But you know, that's what I tell people, you know, you can make, don't focus as much on the gear. I mean, I've literally sold an iPhone 6s time lapse to BBC that was in one of their nature docs. Like, you know, it's, if you have a good shot, you're in the right place at the right time and it looks good enough. Like, you know, a lot of people are so worried about the quality, but like, unless it's being blown up in IMAX or being blown up on like a 6-foot print on the back of a wall, you know, there's still, you know, and that's why I always say there's lots of different industries that you can go to. Just like you say, you can be an influencer, you can be a fine art photographer, and you know, you don't have to, a lot of people like hate on them all, but like, let them do them, let, you know, do you, and you know, it just,
yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of options out there.
But I'd go back to my advice from earlier. Like you said, you know, market yourself, come up with a great website, but I would add on to that and say, you know, just think about what is it that you love doing and that you have a special talent for. And yours exactly. Obviously is in the web design and the marketing yourself and all the back end stuff on that. But it may be somebody else is really into writing. Well, then they should be writing a blog or ebooks or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many different ways to
they
be a photographer.
Be writing for me.
What's that?
You said they should be writing for me. Well,
or write for Toby. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a terrible writer.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, don't look at somebody else and say, I want to do it like them. Think about what you're naturally good at and enjoy doing and go about it that way. But what's interesting is that you can do all those different things and be a photographer, but put yourself out exactly. there in different ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I think that's a good way to wrap it up. I'm sorry. Lots of talking on this podcast. I guess that's all you do on a podcast. But no, that was awesome. Thank you very much for all this insight into the business part of it as well and everything else. So excited to meet you in person in June. And we're going to have a great time. So thank you very much for being on the show.
No, thank you. I'm excited and excited to see who shows up to learn from me in June.
It's going to be really good. Yeah. And hopefully fly in the helicopters too. So, all right.
That's got to happen.
Thanks again. F8, the Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.